This week's parsha is Parsha Shelach. Now, it's an interesting thing when you think about names in Judaism. Many years ago, I wrote when my son Zachariah was born, so he was our third son. We didn't have anyone to name after, so I started looking into the issue of naming children, and I wrote a long article in the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society about it. And I remember when I published the article, one of my colleagues in DRS High School, Rabbi David Friedman, who just retired this year, actually, said to me, "You're going to regret having published that article." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because now everyone's going to call you with all sorts of shaylos about you, because you're putting it out there that you've studied this topic, and everyone always has all sorts of crazy questions about naming children." The ironic thing about it is that even though there's so much written about it, there's very little in terms of halacha. There's pretty much one halacha, and that is Shem Rishoyim Yerkav. You're not supposed to use the name of a Rasha. So you shouldn't name your baby Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin or something like that. The rest is all minhag, other than that. The Gemara records that lone halacha, though, along with the reverse idea. And the reverse idea is Zecher Tzaddik Levracha. That when you mention the name of a tzaddik, you try to associate with the tzaddik with something positive. Right? You always want to be associated with the tzaddik as much as possible. It would be a disgrace to a great person if we were to associate the great person with something negative. So whenever there's something good, you always want to associate with the tzaddik. So keeping that in mind, let's take a look at the Meraglim. You know, the Torah's description of the Meraglim, who descended from Yosef, is most surprising. When describing the spy from Shevet Ephraim, Yoshua ben Nun, the Torah tells us, Matei Ephraim, Yoshua ben Nun. It doesn't go all the way back to the patriarch of the Shevet, to Yosef. It just says, Matei Ephraim, Yoshua ben Nun. On the other hand, when we describe the spy from Shevet Menashe, who was not a tzaddik, who succumbed to sin, who was one of the bad spies, not like Yoshua, the Torah tells us, Lamatei Yosef, Lamatei Menashe, Gadi ben Susi. That it's it goes back to Yosef. So here we have the opportunity to use Yosef in one of two contexts. We could either use it, or we could have used him in both, right? Or in neither. But Dafka, the Torah uses Yosef in the context of describing the spy that succumbed to sin, and not the spy that was a tzaddik. Why would the Torah do that? Furthermore, there's an often repeated passage in the Yerushalmi that seems very popular, but we often hear it when we're still very young and probably needs a little bit of analysis from an adult perspective. The Yerushalmi tells us, the Tanur of Hoshaya, Yud shenital me'imenu sara, olav nishtatach lufnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, va'amar ribono olamim, akartani me'atzadekas hazos, samle HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tzelecha, mishavar yisonosim b'shem nekeva, b'sov teva, chayecha shani nosencha, b'rosh zachar, u'b'resh teva. Hado d'chsiv, v'yikra Moshe l'oshia binun, Yoshua. Yerushalmi, the second paragraph of Sanhedrin, tells us, that's the Hebrew translation of the Yerushalmi pretty much, but the Yerushalmi, the second paragraph of Sanhedrin, tells us that the Yud that was taken from Sarai, when Sarai became Sarah, got really upset, complained to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and said, I don't understand, how could you have taken me away from its tzedekes? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't worry, you were at the very end of the name of a female tzedekes. I'm going to put you at the very beginning of a male's name, of the name of a man. Now, the emphasis on the move from a female to a male is very troubling. Is a tzedekes any lower than a tzaddik? Meaning, I understand from the end of the word to the beginning of the word is an upgrade, right? From the end of the name to the beginning. Why is it considered an upgrade? Why is that something that the Yerushalmi would emphasize? Was Sari Imenu not righteous enough? Would any of us not sign up right now to have a makom in Gan Eden anywhere near Sari Imenu? And that aside from the most obvious question of why didn't Moshe similarly bless any of the other spies and use that yud for any of them? It's only Kayosh Yachol, ni Yoshua. And a third question. At the end of the entire story, after the return of the Meraglim, the Torah tells us about Kalev, that Va'avdi Kalev Ekev Ha'isaruach Acheres Imo Va'imalei Acharai. Why is Kalev singled out as having a Ruach Acheres? He wasn't the only one with a Ruach Acheres. Yeshua also had a Ruach Acheres. Right? Yeshua also didn't succumb to the plot of the rest of the spies. He also didn't join with them in speaking Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Kalev is the one with the Ruach Acheres? So the answer to this question, Rabbi Bezalel Radinsky points out in one of his Svarim, that the answer may, I'm not sure if it was in one of his Svarim or I heard it from him actually, but the answer may lie in a proper understanding of two points. First point is that the Meraglim had a dual mission. You know, we use the term spy, but spy implies, you know, like the things you see in like the CIA museum in Washington, the FBI museum in Washington, where they show you like the cane that's really a gun, and like, you know, all these covert things, the pen that really is a knife, and I don't know what, and is really a recorder, and does all these covert kinds of things. There was nothing in terms of covert operations that was really going on with the spies. They were told to do two specific tasks. They were told to find out ma ha'aretz hashmena hi imraza hayeshba eitz imayin. Just look at the land, see the general condition of the land, the goodness of the land. The Jewish people would find encouragement in knowing what they were fighting for. That if they're fighting for something that's really great, so then that will get them excited. And they indeed came back with the magical fruits and glowing reports of an Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. From that perspective, they actually did a good job. But then there was a second part of the mission. Umaha arim asher hu yoshev behena, habimachanim im bimivtzarim. What kind of cities were there? Were they protected cities? Scout out the prospects of war. Where would the greatest challenges lie? Where were the greatest vulnerabilities to exploit? And that is where they failed, because they said, we're never going to be able to overcome them. They're too strong. They're too fortified. They're too powerful. They're giants. That's where the spies really failed. So that's point number one to think about, is the two missions that they had. The second point is, once we understand the mission, it's important to understand the dual nature of Shevet Yosef. See, everyone agrees that Yosef is broken into two separate tribes for Yerushas Haaretz. You just read Sefer Yoshua, that's clear. You read Parshas Naso, and you see that there were two separate tribes with regard to the Karbanos of the respective Nesiyim at the Chanukah and HaMishkan. But what's not as clear is whether Yosef went to war as two separate tribes or as a single unit. And it's very possible that in fighting wars, Yosef was to be considered a single unified tribe. And therefore, it could be that Yoshua's mission as the representative of half of Yosef may have simply been to scout out the various qualities of the land in anticipation of Yerushas Haaretz, but not about the war. The second mission of scouting the prospects of war maybe was not really Yoshua's responsibility. That was for Gadi ben Susi, Lemate Menashe, to take care of. And based on that, against that backdrop, Rav Rudinsky points out, the answers to all of our questions become self-evident. The prayer that Moshe offered on behalf of Yeshua was to be saved, me'atzas meraglim, not me'chet ha-meraglim. The challenge for Yeshua was not to stand up to anybody and express an independent spirit. It was simply to stay out of the discussion entirely. It's not your job to discuss what they're going to be speaking Lashon Hara about. You have no say in that matter. Keep to what your task is. Your task is not to evaluate words, to evaluate land. And that may be why Moshe added a letter from the name of a great woman, because Chazal tell us, Ein darka shel isha lasos milchama, that Yoshua's feminine side, so to speak, has to shine over here. He has to shy away from the whole discussion about war, because that's not Yoshua's job. That was for Gadi to take care of. So, in fact, Sarah in particular singled out as an example of Nashim Ba'ol Tevarach. If Yoshua could just manage to stick to his limited mission and avoid getting dragged into the ugliness of the plans of the Meraglim, he would be successful. No such blessing can be offered to the other Meraglim who are tasked with reporting on war. They had to report on the war. They couldn't stay out of it. Whether they would respond appropriately, that's their bechira chavshis. Yosef is only mentioned in connection with Gadi and not with Yoshua, because only Gadi represented the complete mission of Shevet Yosef, which is to see what the story would be with war. Yoshua only represented half of the mission. And Kalev perhaps is singled out as having a ruach acheres, a contrarian spirit, because he is the only one who had to stand up for something. That's why he's the one who spoke. It wasn't Yoshua's role to speak. I think the message of this Vart is such a critical message. Part of our task, a major part of our task, in avoiding Lashon Hara, and really avoiding machlokas in general, is not just to say the right things and to give encouragement when it's needed. It's knowing when not to get involved at all. Know when something is not your asek, it's not your inyan. Just because someone is saying something, it doesn't mean that it needs our response. Right? And this is a major issue with social media, that people see that, oh, someone tweeted something that I don't like. That means that I have to respond to it. No, you don't. If it's not your asek, if it's not your achrayus, then it doesn't demand our response. And the situation will likely be diffused much more quickly rather than elevated by those who stick their nose in where it doesn't belong. And that's the midah of Yoshua, the midas hanekeva of Yoshua, taking that yud from Sarai and putting it at the beginning of the name of Yoshua. And with that, I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.